Some of us waste so much headspace and time arguing about dumb little opinions. Now, that is something I have never been guilty of ever in my life, but I'm sure everybody else. This is our problem. And Paul talks about it today in 1 Timothy chapter 4.
Yeah, my problem is I love to argue. I do, and I'm ashamed of that.
Yeah,
but it's almost like it can be a fun pastime to engage into a debate.
Daughter Reese is just like I'm always telling her like stop, just like you're just being a contrarian. Even the other night, she said something and I agreed with her, and then she disagreed. It's like you're trying to fight with me right now.
Yeah, I've noticed that she's kind of in the stage right now where
she just wants to argue. But some of us are that way. We're just in dumb arguments. And Paul wants to Holy Spirit wants to convict you through Paul today.
That's right. You're listening Between the Lines. I'm Scott.
I'm Junior.
And let's get into 1 Timothy 3. Junior, you want to get started? Do we get...
We're in 4, right?
No, chapter 3.
We're in 3?
Yeah, so you did the wrong hook, didn't you?
That's for tomorrow.
Yeah.
Okay, well, tomorrow when you come back, we're going to talk about the dumb things you argue about.
All right.
Here's the hook for today. How can men and women, especially in a marriage, do better together? Paul talks about
that
today.
That's good.
1 Timothy 3. I just thought of that just now. I need some credit on that one.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, why don't you get started? Verse 1. There's 16 verses. So okay. Yeah.
Verse 1 says, "This is a trustworthy saying. If someone aspires to be a church leader, he desires an honorable position."
That's the position of an elder, by the way. I mean, NLT was trying to make it just really generic, but the word there is presbyteros, which is an elder.
And that verse is true. He's not talking about teachers, though, because sometimes as teaching pastoral people come up and be like, hey, I'd like to teach. And we never take anybody who asks to teach.
No.
Because desiring
to be on the stage
is
a little
like,
concerning to me.
Yeah. I love putting people up on the stage who don't love it.
Yeah.
Because God often speaks through people. Reluctant leaders. Verse 2 says, so a church leader must be a man whose life is above reproach. He must be faithful to his wife. He must exercise self-control, live wisely, and have a good reputation. He must enjoy having guests in his home. That's always one that I'm very much working on because I'm a homebody introvert. He must enjoy having guests in his home, and he must be able to teach.
It's able to teach him.
What did I say? I said he must be able to teach.
Yeah. No. Yeah, I'm just saying it's not necessarily that he... is teaching regularly, but that he has the ability to be able to teach others.
He must not be a heavy drinker or be violent. He must be gentle, not quarrelsome, and not love money. He must manage his family well, having children who respect and obey him. For if a man cannot manage his own household, how can he take care of God's church?
You know, the whole thing here with these elders, and that is, they were to choose people that had already demonstrated respectability in their private lives and in their community, in among church people, as well as just where they live, that they have a good reputation. And when people look at them, they think, yeah, that's a good man. And I could follow him. I'd like to be like this person. Those are the kind of people you want leading the church. And they have to demonstrate that in all areas of their life. He says in particular, when it comes to their families, that that's the kind of husband they are. That's the kind of dad they are. The kind of... showing good, godly, loving leadership so they can lead that way in the church.
Yeah,
we've got elders that way. I mean, man, I'm so grateful for the elders that we've got in our church. And they are godly men who love their wives, are great dads. Most of them have raised their kids already who also love the Lord and are doing very well.
Yeah.
So our church is just so blessed that we are led by a group of men that are demonstrating this.
I'm so glad you said that because I meant to share this in staff meeting during our stories. But Brittany, who works with me on research and
putting
stuff,
material together and stuff,
she had texted me last week. She had said, "I just saw Scott Olson, who's chairman of our elders." He said, "I just saw him at Randhurst scrubbing a floor on his hands and knees, scrubbing a floor." I was like, that's the guy who holds us accountable.
Right.
I have it no other way. Like, I love that guy.
Yeah, that's cool.
Great elders.
But Scott is typical of the other elders as well. None of them would feel that it would be above them or below them to scrub the floor.
Right. Yeah. A church leader must not be a new believer because he might become proud and the devil would cause him to fall. Also, people outside the church must speak well of him so that he will not be disgraced and fall into the devil's trap. Take it to verse 8.
Yeah, in the same way, deacons must be well-respected and have integrity. Now, the word deacon, diakonos, is literally means servant. They must not be heavy drinkers or dishonest. Why the same categories here? And I think I can help you out with that, because we only have male elders, and the qualifications for the elders seems to be pretty clear. This is for men. But deacons, I think it's different, and I'll show you in a minute. So they must be committed to the mystery of the faith now revealed and must live with a clear conscience. Before they are appointed as deacons, let them be closely examined. If they pass the test, let them serve as deacons. So these deacons are those that are servants, but they're also demonstrating godliness in their lives. But they have to also demonstrate some leadership, because and just in with their own families as well. Verse 11, here's where I guess we could say the kicker comes in. It says, in the same way, their wives. All of the English translations say this, and they shouldn't, because the word wife is not in there.
So it's spouses.
No, it's not even spouses.
No?
No, it's the women. It's literally women and the women. So in other words, he's saying the deacons are to be this way, and the women, in other words, the women deacons are this way.
Okay.
So I think that what it's saying is that the elders are men, but the deacons, which are also to be leaders, are both men and women. We know that Phoebe, who is in the book of Acts, mm-hmm. that's a woman's name. She was called a deacon, which was an official term for a leadership position in the church, not leadership as in making the decisions for the church. That was the elders, but leading ministry teams.
Yeah.
And that's what we do in our church. All of our ministry leaders are deacons, and most of our staff are deacons because they lead ministry teams. So in the same way, the women must be respected and must not slander others. They must exercise self-control and be faithful in everything they do. So he's kind of giving a qualification here, and particularly when it comes to the women deacons, this is how they're supposed to be. Deacon is to be faithful to his wife, and he must manage his children and household well. So there is leadership here. They have to have demonstrated leadership. Those who do well as deacons will be rewarded with respect from others and will have increased confidence in their faith in Christ Jesus.
Now, here's where kind of the hook comes in. These leaders' homes mm-hmm. are their resume for leading
yeah.
the church.
Yep.
And all of these things that Paul is saying is required of these leaders mm-hmm. is first required at home.
Yeah.
So a husband should, you know, the wife, it says, you know, not slander others, but exercise self-control and be faithful. The husband, clear conscience, not be a heavy drinker, not dishonest with money. All of these things happen at home and then are applied in the church.
Yeah. And I don't know if you remember this or not. You were 19 or 20 years old when we moved here to Chicago, and you had just graduated from high school. You're going to Moody. I think you took a year just to do general ed. But I said to you and to Erica and also to Brock, because that's when MySpace was big. It was before Facebook. And the search committee from this church, when they were researching me, you know what they did? They got on your social media
mm-hmm.
and they checked you out, Erica out. I guess Brock had a MySpace as well. And one of the reasons why they were eager to have me come was because of you guys, my kids.
Sure.
And I said to you guys at that time, I said, you guys are the greatest asset that I've got in ministry, because you're really living out this Christian stuff in your daily lives. And that's my resume.
Yeah.
It's my family.
That's good.
That's how it's actually stated here in this passage. Yeah. All right. Am I reading or are you reading?
You are reading.
All right. I'm writing these things to you now, verse 14, even though I hope to be with you soon, so that if I'm delayed, you will know how people must conduct themselves in the household of God, that is, in the church. This is the church of the living God, which is the pillar and foundation of the truth. Now, again, the church he was in at this time was Ephesus. So Timothy was the lead pastor in the church in Ephesus, which is a cool thing. We were just there a couple of weeks ago, and that thing says the pillar and foundation of the truth, which there was a house that the foundations of what they believe was the house church that was a first century house church was there.
Hmm.
We think that's where Paul would have been.
Awesome place.
I mean, that's really cool. It was a major church for that whole region, actually very influential for all of the cities around that were surrounding them. All right, without question, this is a great mystery of our faith. Christ was revealed in the human body and vindicated by the Spirit. He was seen by angels and announced to the nations. He was believed in throughout the world and taken to heaven in glory. They believe that was an early hymn that they would sing in that early church.
Cool.
Let's get over to Proverbs.
All right. So be Proverbs chapter would be 11.
Oh man,
I've been like a day
somehow,
off here. So
you know, I somehow got messed up here.
Well, I was in the wrong 1 Timothy.
Yeah. So. Well, my Bible on my iPad just flipped all the way over to Psalm. So okay, I'm back over now.
Okay.
Yeah, this is good. Psalm 11 or Proverbs 11 verse 17 says, and again the whole chapter, read the whole chapter, but verse 17 says, "Your own soul is nourished when you are kind." Your own soul is nourished when you're kind,
yeah.
But you destroy yourself when you're cruel. Let me ask you a question. When you honk at somebody, how do you feel?
I feel like I corrected them and then made the world better.
Well,
no,
my,
I don't.
You know, my soul feels malnourished. I feel empty.
Sure.
I just feel cruddy. I feel stupid. It's like, why do you get so impatient, Scott? But when I treat someone with kindness, it's amazing. This is how God designed us, that He rewards us with feelings for being good to people.
Yeah.
And you do. Your soul is nourished. Now, the nourishing isn't just the way you feel. It's also, it makes you better.
Yeah.
That just by being kind to other people.
It gives you more patience.
Yeah, and there's never an excuse to be unkind.
Right.
Sometimes you have to have tough conversations. And sometimes you have to say hard things.
Sometimes kindness is saying hard things.
Yes, but it needs to be said in kindness.
Right. Yep.
And then it says, but you destroy yourself when you are cruel.
Yep. All right. Well, today
that's
is
a good
national,
word to remember today.
National Living Donor Day.
Okay.
So become an organ donor.
So how do you do that? How can you be a living donor? I mean, if I gave someone my heart, I'd be dead.
No, you could give a kidney. But
oh, okay.
You also like, I think this is for like the driver's license. You want to be a donor.
Okay.
I always do that because I ride a motorcycle and I figure like, man, I could go anytime. So
what, you know, and I did. I signed off on my driver's license as well. But I've always thought this. What if I die and, you know, my eyes are still good and they take my eyes and they put it in somebody else and the rapture happens?
What happens? They lose their eyes.
They lose their eyes. It's like their eyes are going to pop out of their head.
I'm sure God will figure something out.
All right. Well, I signed it anyway, and if that's the case, I think that would be quite.
All right. Well, on that note of somebody walking around with my dad's eyes, and then they suddenly pop out. Have a good Thursday. Don't honk at anybody.
Yeah.
And tomorrow,
be kind to people.
We'll talk about that hook that I gave you today.
Yeah, because it was great hook for tomorrow.